Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka, welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us on the line today from Cape Town is Ms. Penina Venster, who is the editor of Glamour magazine. She has edited the magazine since its debut in South Africa way back in 2004. Glamour magazine has a long history, founded 77 years ago in 1939 in the United States. Today, it remains a leading monthly fashion and beauty publication. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's such a privilege to be with you.
As a magazine editor, you're tasked with numerous responsibilities, whether that is serving readers with relevant content to delivering on the bottom line from a commercial aspect in terms of readership levels or ad spend. And these days, your bouquet extends not only from the print, but also into online platforms. What would you say have been your greatest challenges in this role?
I think your description of the way in which editors now function is incredibly incisive. A single week for any editor, including me, could include a feature planning meeting for print, then a discussion about what's happening to our website, then talk about social media. There might be an event, they might be seeing advertisers, their commercial considerations. So if I think of my challenges as an editor, then I think there are challenges that affect almost every woman on the planet. How to multifunction, how to multitask, how to stay centered and focused in an increasingly fractured world. Because I think we are all asking these questions. How do we manage to be both agile and true to our values?
What would you say are some of the milestones that you want to achieve in your capacity as editor?
Okay. So I think that to work in women's magazines is an incredible responsibility because we are interacting every hour, every day, every month with women. And it's also an enormous privilege and a huge pleasure, particularly in South Africa, because I think South African women are amazing. From our work in politics, our work in the social sphere, to our style. So if there were milestones that I would like to achieve as an editor, it has to do with that area, with my responsibility, with my privilege, with my pleasure of interacting with women. And I mean that by the women I work with every day at work and the ones that we communicate with. So my goal really is to make women's lives better. Sometimes it might be a huge way. It might shift their careers. It might shift somebody out of an abusive relationship, for example, something that they've read. And other times it's just to give them a little hit of joy and fun. It could be a great idea for a lipstick or the way that you're going to do your hair, which can just give you that sexy confidence bounce in your step and pleasure in being a woman.
And the reality is we have got such a non-homogeneous society, and looking at the variety and the diversity of women, there's just so much variety.
There is. I think our society is incredibly broad. And in fact, if I go and do a conference, we have an annual Glamour conference, and one of the points that I've made with the other editors is that I feel South African women are right on the cutting edge, on the vanguard of what is happening to women around the world. The kind of growth that we've seen, the kind of challenges we've seen, a very extreme expression of what women are experiencing anywhere else.
We've looked at your current challenges in the role. We've looked at the future on what you want to achieve as editor. Can you share with us a few of the landmarks in your career?
First of all, I have to say finding a career was a landmark for me, which is why when young women come and talk to me and they say we don't know what to do, then I just say hang on, because that thing will find you and you will find that thing. So simply finding a career that accommodated what were quite a diverse and vague set of skills was an amazing achievement for me. Having a column on the Sunday Times, launching Marie Claire, one of the first international titles to come into the country, and then the launch of Glamour. And then there are there have been things along the way, projects that we work on as the team. So, for example, it might be supporting charities like Santa Shoebox, which is a great charity that gives a festive season gift to tens of thousands of children across the country who might not have had it. And then other areas where we can make a difference, we can raise awareness of gender issues, of sexual choices. It's a range of achievements, and sometimes it's just somebody saying, I got such a kick out of the latest issue, you gave me pleasure with that story. That's a wonderful sense of achievement.
I'd like to go back a little bit to where you said one of the biggest challenges was finding a career. And if I recall from one of our previous conversations, you are quite dynamic in terms of your interests and creative flair. And ultimately, your career has been a fusion of your interests.
Yeah. I started off studying literature, English literature and drama and film. And then I had always had a fantasy about going to art school. So off I went to art school. And I did all the stuff that goes with that. You know, I was a barmaid, I was a waitress, I made earrings and sold them at marketplaces, and I landed up working as a graphic designer on Business Day newspaper, a job to which I was hopelessly unsuited. I thought they were going to fire me every day, they should have. And a friend phoned and said there is a job going at Fair Lady, and I walked in there, and that was it. I fell in love. And it was an abiding love. It's been one of my great love affairs ever. Has been with the world of journalism and women's magazines. So I think that we can find that place that holds us, and it's not always a conventional one. It's not what we always expect.
Staying with the topic of media, in 2015, there was a study conducted by GenderLinks covering gender in the media industry across the Southern African region. And interestingly, what they found was that there is a high ratio of women to men studying media, so 64% to 36%. But then when you look in the employment space in media, women only accounted for 40% of media employees, 34% of media managers. And what I found more shocking was the fact that women's views and voices only accounted for 20% of news sources in Southern African media, which is much lower than the global average, which already is quite low, of 24%. In your opinion, due to Glamour being a magazine for women, do you think this excludes you from those type of statistics?
On one level, yes. I think there are many ways in which women's magazines are excluded from the statistics we're talking about. The editorial, the advertising teams that I work with are almost entirely female. So increasingly are the management teams. So on Glamour, for example, I have worked with two women MDs, our finance director, our business development manager. They are all women. Similarly, internationally, our global creative director, our global publishing director are women. But there is another aspect to this question, and these absolutely shocking and frankly depressing statistics. And that is that women's magazines do not exist in isolation. And these statistics are deeply disturbing to me, both as a member of the media industry and as a woman functioning in this society. And we do have to ask ourselves, what is happening to that terrific talent that goes in the studies? Why are these women falling away and not making it, first of all, into the industry and then up that ladder?
One of the things that I thought about, and I have pondered this question, is that possibly there is a time lag, that perhaps it's a case of we have these individuals studying in the environment, but they haven't necessarily moved into the workforce yet. And I'm really hopeful that in the next phase of the GenderLinks study, that there is a shift in those numbers to prove me right.
I hope so too. And I must say that the statistics did seem extreme to me. And I'm not doubting them, because that clearly is what's going on. Maybe as well, I think that the digital revolution is going to help us shift that, because if, for example, a young graduate cannot get a job in the conventional arena, she might start her own thing. She might start blogging. She might start her own website. So I think that is going to open up opportunities. Things will not be so tightly held.
And you mentioned that in the environment that you work in, it is a female orientated from a content perspective. but also in terms of the employee composition, that you are working with a lot of women, and that's been the flavor within the magazine space currently. Can you share with us if there are any policies in particular concerning gender equality within the Condé Nast publishing group?
I don't know that there has ever been a formal policy. I think it is quite simply a group which has been largely dominated by women. So Condé Nast, we're talking about people like Anna Winter, for example, as part of Condé Nast, Jo Elvin, editing UK Glamour, Cindy Levy in the US, who's doing extraordinary things for women. So Condé Nast, I think, is a publishing company that has made huge number of opportunities available to women. It's one of the reasons I'm very proud to be part of the company.
And I think also with the fact that women having proven themselves in the role, that it becomes almost as a self-fulfilling prophecy, that you've seen the effects, you've seen the positive contributions that they've made. So why on earth can't other women do the same?
Well, exactly. There are such extraordinary and inspiring women around us, so many. And I mean often senior chefs, and often those who don't operate in our environment at all. I am as inspired by the woman who helped with my groceries at Pick and Pay this morning as I am by many politicians, because the challenges that women are going through every day just to survive, get a job, transport back home, look after their families, I just think women are amazing.
I concur with that statement. Well, one of the difficult components in gender equality principles is balancing the dynamic of your professional life with your personal life. As a successful woman who has worked incredibly hard, you've mentioned some of the components in your career, from being with the Sunday Times through to launching Marie Claire, Glamour magazine. Has there been an all-in-one winning formula that you've managed to figure out?
If there is an all-in-one formula, please, it just sounds amazing. Whoever has it, can they please tell me where I can get it for myself? Because really, if I am honest, I have to say that there have been many years when my life has not been in the least bit balanced. We're talking about working every day until, 10 a.m. or 3 a.m. if that's what it takes, including Saturday, and then sleeping and going out for a bit on Sunday. And we're talking about that routine for 6 months at a time, and then again at regular intervals. And I really did love what I was doing. But, obviously you don't want to keep going like that, because it will make you very sad and crazy.
And not sustainable.
No, exactly. It will make the people around you sad and crazy too. And I had to teach myself not to work on weekends unless it's really urgent. I've had to work on finding that switch-off button in my head for after hours. And I've been very fortunate that I've had a supportive partner with his own career. But I do think when you talk about balance, I'm not sure that you can always achieve it. I think it sometimes takes very long hours with very huge focus in one zone. And I think it actually just burdens us more. This idea that we have to have everything in balance, I don't think that's possible. I think that you go through stages in life, you focus on different arenas in different stages.
And the reality is that I don't think true success is possible without sacrifice.
Yeah, I agree. I think if anything, one of the great errors of our digital age is that it has created the impression that things can come easily, that they're so much glossier than actually they are. And it takes infinitely harder work. I sometimes am approached by young women and they say, they want to come and work on the magazine. They say, what would you like to do? They say, I want to do what you do. I want to be the editor. And I ask them what they think it is. They have no idea. They think it is what they see in the movies or on, in TV shows. As you say, it's a lot more hard work than anybody thinks.
And whilst we're on the topic of challenges, can you share with us some of the gender challenges that you've encountered during your career and your advice to women when facing similar circumstances?
I was very struck by Madonna's recent speech where she won a Lifetime Award. And I was struck by it because Madonna, to most of us, is somebody so fearless and so unstoppable. And she talked about the challenges that she has had to face, which had been a shocking level of judgment, an absolutely extraordinary level of sexism. And one of the main things that came across for me in that talk that she did, in that response that she gave, was that she just kept on trucking. And I think that's the primary thing. We're aware of those challenges around us. We can't not be. But while we are dealing with them as a society, we as individual women just have to keep going. I think you just have to fight through them and not let them get in your way. I know that sounds easy. It's not easy. But you can't let them stop you. Because if you let them stop you, then they will have won. And you can't let that happen.
And when one door closes, you've got to be knocking on 1,000 more because one will open.
Exactly. There have been times where I've been in the depths of despair and I thought this is never going to work out. And life can be amazing, surprising, delightful, and full of blessings. So I think also we need to have, we need to retain optimism.
True. And hope and luck, I think, are some of those magic ingredients which fall into place that are totally unpredictable.
Exactly, because there is such a thing as serendipity. Whether you call it luck or you call it good fortune or you call it divine guidance, but we've all encountered it in our lives, and it's the most magical and wonderful thing when it happens.
So true, when the universe aligns. Today, we're talking to Ms. Penina Fenster, who's the editor of Glamour magazine.
Hi, I'm Zonke Dikana, a South African Afro-soul musician, songwriter, and producer. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.
You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band. Also available on DSTV channel 902. Today, we're talking to Ms. Penina Fenster, who is the editor of Glamour magazine. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Penina, taking into consideration the challenges and successes that women's legal rights have had over the last few years, what areas do you think still need attention with respect to women?
Well, I actually have to be honest and say I can't even begin to talk about the areas that need to be addressed because it seems to me there are so many of them. From many of our leaders, and I mean that in our country and in countries around the world, the levels of sexism that we're seeing, to absolutely day-to-day issues as basic as the price of sanitary pads. And I don't feel qualified to comment on all of those challenges that we're facing because, as I say, I think they're so wide-ranging. But at the same time, I think that sexism can be corrected.
And what, in your opinion, do you think we need to do to help correct it?
That inherent sexism.
Yeah.
I say this against the background that I think we have had horrifying reminders of the level of sexism in the world over the past year, to say the least. But may I just talk on a personal level here?
Of course.
Because it's about something that I learned from my father, who was a psychiatrist, and that is that people can change. I said to him once, I said, do you think people can change? He said, I wouldn't do what I do if I didn't believe that people can change. And I think we have to believe and trust that, because otherwise there is no point in being alive and human if we are growing and learning. So that change might take work. It might take therapy, counseling, AA, friends, a whole bunch of things. But we can learn to make better choices for ourselves and for other people, to be more conscious, to be kinder to ourselves and others. And obviously sometimes it will be a monumental failure, definitely for myself. I'm a work in progress. But sometimes those shifts will be beyond our dreams. And I keep thinking, if individuals can change the way that my father taught me to believe, then households can change and streets and neighborhoods and cities can change. So I believe that. First of all, I believe we change as individuals and then we can change as communities. And also, if I look around at the growth of women professionally, personally, politically, socially, and at the growth of the number of men who are becoming more conscientized and respectful to women than previous generations, I think there's reason to feel hope about sexism in society shifting.
And given what you've said, and I think that's really important because often we hear leopard can't change his spots, but it's really refreshing that having an expert in human behavior saying that, yes, people can change and it's part of growth and learning, that I think that women have an incredibly important role from a point of view of raising children and raising children the right way. Then that behavior becomes ingrained.
Yeah. But that is also why I think if I look around at the sons of my friends, this is a whole new generation of guys because they grew up with mothers who worked, who achieved, often single mothers. They were taught a level of respect for women that previous generations didn't have. So I look at young men and young women today, and it does make me feel optimistic. I think that we have extraordinary mothers, and that makes very often extraordinary sons.
Very true. Staying with the topic of women, and particularly in your vein, being a female editor in South Africa and with the publications you've worked on, they do extend into the continent. And in that space, the content sometimes touches on sensitive points, whether that is culture, religion, tradition. In your experience, do you think that women in managerial roles face different challenges to their male counterparts? And would you say that they're judged differently too?
Oh, I really, really want to say no to that question. But the answer is absolutely and without a doubt, we are judged differently to men in fields ranging from politics to entertainment. And we all know about that judgment. We know about it because we've experienced it in our work lives and in our private lives. You know, men are quite simply not, you know, if a man is ambitious, then a woman going after the same thing is called a whole bunch of words that I'm actually not going to use in this context. And the shaming judgments that happen when it comes to our sexuality, our appearance, our age are extraordinary, and they do not apply to men. So, yeah, I think those judgments do exist. At the same time, I think society is becoming more tolerant and accepting of things that were taboo a few decades ago. You know, some of it is practical. Society quite simply has to be tolerant because more and more women are wielding more and more power, financially, creatively, entrepreneurial. But the other thing is that boundaries are shifting. So, you know, when a huge conglomerate like L'Oreal uses a transgender model in its campaigns, then you know that judgments are coming down.
One of the things I'd like to pick up on when I ask this question, you said that if a man is being perceived as ambitious, it's okay. But for a woman, she's reviewed differently. And I think this is also something that has to stop, where you have certain attributes, or success attributes, or motivation attributes, which are viewed in a positive nature if a man's doing it, but in a negative nature if a woman's doing it. And one of the expressions I heard was that a man can be a boss, but when a woman is looked in that light, she's perceived as being bossy. So it's totally different connotations and perspectives of exactly the same thing. And purely because it's coming from a man or from a woman, there's a different interpretation. And that just doesn't gel.
Mm-hmm. All those B words, you know, bossy, ball breaker, bitch. I think we just have to reclaim the word bitch because I agree with you. And I think in some ways even more disturbing to me is when those judgments happen around sexuality, because our sexuality is connected to the most private, to the most inner, to the most individualistic parts of us. So when those judgments happen around sexuality, it is profoundly damaging to women.
I would also say that extends to appearance.
Oh, my God, with bells on. I couldn't agree more. I think this is not to take away the pleasure of fashion, style, self-expression through how we look. And obviously working on titles like Glamour, you know, that's been very part and parcel of what I do. And I think fashion style or ways of celebrating ourselves and also wonderful for self-esteem. But when they become the sole lens through which we're viewed, that's where it's damaging. And I don't think men are expected to be attractive.
Whilst we're on the topic of equality, we know that South Africa has an abundance of legislation which is being designed, whether it's from a quota point of view, to try and address gender gaps and promote equality. What's your perspectives of legislation to try to achieve 50-50 representation or equal opportunity or equal pay for the same professions and jobs?
I think we do need it. If we just talk about one of the areas that you've touched on, equal pay just for one. If we could get equal pay right, then a huge, huge amount. And that equal pay does not apply, then unfortunately I think we do need legislation because society quite simply has to be moved along in terms of women and girls. So yeah, get equal pay right. Boy, a lot of stuff is going to come right with that.
And now I'm going to ask a question for you to look into your hypothetical crystal ball. Given the experiences that you've had within the media environment, you've been exposed to an abundance of stories and transformation, looking at how women's lives are changing and progressing. How do you think South Africa will look in 20 or 30 years' time concerning women's rights and gender equality?
I'd like to be positive about it. I truly wouldn't hazard a guess because I think we live in such a surprising and fast-moving world. I think in the last year alone, things have happened that we didn't anticipate at all in the global arena. So we're talking about things like Brexit, the rise of Donald Trump, all of which have enormous impact on the lives of women. Some things are hard to predict. So I wouldn't hazard a guess about where we'll be, but I definitely know what I'm praying and hoping for. And I see signs that what we all hope and pray for is manifesting.
Yes, I do hope that our trajectory gets back on its course in terms of pursuing equality, and hopefully that will remain true and be a impassioned plea within people's perspectives.
I think also, there isn't just one thing going on at a time. There are different trends going on. So, yes, there's a Donald Trump. Yes, there's a Brexit. Yes, there's the rape statistics. Yes, there's all that stuff that shocks us to the core. But I don't think it should blind us to everything else that's happening simultaneously, which is encouraging, which has to do with women blossoming, with the growth of society. That is also going on. That didn't go anywhere. I think evil and good, shadows and light, progress and retrogression, those things are happening simultaneously. You just hope that in the main we're moving towards the light as a society.
And I think if we have a focus and a long-term goal, that despite the noise that happens around things, that we can stay true to that path.
I think we can, and also I think we forget how very young the movement of women's liberation is. I have a particular interest in the suffragettes. I've been reading a lot about the suffragettes recently. And those suffragettes who we all think they chained. We have this idea of them chaining themselves to the railings, which of course they did, but they did so much more. And that was only around about 100 years ago that women in the UK got the vote. It's a matter of decades since women in South Africa all got the vote. We're a very, very young liberation movement, women's liberation, and probably the most threatening movement for liberation that world society has seen, because if women are liberated, it shifts everything. It shifts economies.
Of course, we represent, in South Africa, 52% of the population, and if we say that conservatively, the rest of the world, that's half the world's population. Mm-hmm. So if there is a movement, we certainly have the numbers behind us to drive positive change.
We have the numbers behind us. I think we have the will behind us. And I think we do have to keep reminding ourselves that women's liberation is still very new in the history of world civilization. So it's really important to maintain perspective and optimism.
Now I'd like to ask you a question that I ask all my guests who have made tremendous achievements in their respective fields of expertise, and that pertains to what have been some of the key drivers to your success.
Okay, first of all, I have to say thank you for the compliment. I think of myself very much as a work in progress. But in terms of things that I'm proud of, the very first thing that springs to mind for me is other people. Because as a journalist, I have been privileged to work with wonderful colleagues and with amazing editors who inspired and encouraged me, were just all round wonderful. Every one of my opportunities in my career has come from a woman, from the first call I got of somebody saying to me, hey, there's a job going, why don't you go and see about it, you know, to the women MDs that I've worked with. So we're talking about people who gave me a break and a kind of a shot at the big brass ring, and I hope that I can make those opportunities available to other women. So I've had the privilege of working with many brilliant and talented leaders and managers in South Africa and internationally. And then, of course, on a personal level, you know, a family who were encouraging, friends who supported me, and also sometimes knocked sense into my head when I needed to have some sense knocked into my head. You need those friends to do that. And then hard work, because there have been times when I have worked like a crazy, crazy, crazy person. But then, you know, I love to act a crazy, crazy person, and I do. So I think that's a factor. And then there is what we were talking about. You know, you can call it good fortune or blessings or divine guidance or the universe or serendipity. But sometimes you do just get a lucky break.
And what would you say had the biggest impact on you to make you who you are today, if there is one?
Wow. I think sometimes we don't even see that those moments are pivotal. But, for example, I have this very clear memory of sitting on my grandmother's veranda when I was about, must have been about 11 years old. My grandmother lives in Port Elizabeth, and I can still remember early, early in the morning. No one else was up in the house, and there I was sitting on the veranda looking at her very lovely garden, and she had a sash of Vogues. And I remember quite clearly picking up that first Vogue and being absolutely immersed in this world of beauty, of style, of inspiration. And I had no idea that decades later that would be where I landed up. And then another pivotal moment for me, not a sort of conventional piece of advice, but when I turned 21, my father, who I talked about and was a humanist and an extraordinary man, gave me what I think is the best 21st birthday present he could have given me. It wasn't jewelry, it wasn't a car, it wasn't a trip overseas, it was meditation classes. And that was pivotal, because meditation has been an absolutely invaluable tool, and I highly recommend it for all women. Whether your thing is visualization or breathing or sitting still, looking at a flower, looking at the ocean, meditating, go to YouTube. They're great guided meditations. It's a favorite part of my day. I believe in ritual. I think women are tied to ritual, and I know it sounds kind of crazy, but I think it's made a big difference to my career, being able to meditate. Then there's stuff that could be growth moments. I remember when I first became editor, and before that I'd been a journalist and a columnist and a freelance editor and a freelance writer, and there I was sitting in my office and I heard the team outside, they were talking about where they were going to go for brunch on Saturday morning. And I sat there and I thought, but they didn't invite me. And then I realized, well, they're not going to invite you. You're the boss. You wouldn't go for breakfast with your boss. It's supposed to be relaxing. And that was pivotal for me, because it was a great big struggle to me to navigate the roads between wanting to be liked and wanting to lead and help other people succeed. It's what the writer Catherine White, who actually was originally an editor, she calls it wanting to be a Barney boss. And you can't be a Barney boss. So that moment of realizing it was pivotal to me.
Well, thank you very much for sharing some of those components to your success. There were a few points there that I think are really important from a mind, body and soul perspective. And whether that's being given sound advice or, I suppose, chastised by your friends and people who know better, to knock the sense into you, mm-hmm. and the realization that you can't be liked all the time, and that we have different roles that we have to fulfill, and in the process of those roles, we adopt different behaviors.
Mm-hmm. I think if we go back to what we were talking about, how men get judged and women get judged, there are things that men can learn from women, but there are also sure as heck things that we can learn from men.
So true. That really is the essence of equality, sharing and making sure that we're getting the best out of both genders.
No, because we're sharing the planet. So, you know, what we're going to do, these are our brothers, our husbands, our friends, our sons, our fathers, our colleagues, and the same thing applies to them, you know, on the other side of the mirror. So, yeah, we have to make sustained efforts to get on, because otherwise we're going to destroy the planet.
Which will be no good for nobody.
Which is they're not going to help any of us. They're going to put us all in a very, very bad mood. Mm. I definitely not recommend it.
And on that note, we are coming to the end of the show. So if I could please ask you to share a few words of inspiration which you'd like to pass on to young girls and women in the continent that are listening to us.
The first thing I think is just, I would really encourage women and young women to be kinder to themselves. We talked about being judgmental earlier on. I think we so judgmental of ourselves, you know, and it's a thing that Marianne Williamson, who's one of the kind of alternate speakers, talks about. She says that she had a problem and she reassured herself. She said, oh, don't worry about that. She said, it's only in your head. And then suddenly she went, hang on, you know, in my head is the worst place for that thing to be. So those judgments sometimes are not happening outside. They're the judgments that we subject ourselves to. So that would be my first piece of advice and goal for us as women, would be that we would stop judging ourselves so darn hard. And the other is something that I read recently. It's not advice that actually came from a woman. It came from a writer called Stephen Pressfield. But what he said was, he said this idea in society that you can be whatever you want. Now, speaking for myself, you know, that's just plain not true, because it doesn't matter how many times people tell me they're going to teach me how to play tennis. When that ball goes over the net, I am going to run away from it. So it's absolutely not true that you can be whatever you want to be. But the point that Stephen Pressfield makes is, why would you want that anyway? Because we all are born with a gift. We all have something to bring to the world. So forget about being what you want to be, be whatever you want to be, and it's something out there. So much more enjoyable thing to do is to kind of excavate your own personality and be who you are, because we all came here to share something wonderful to give, and ways of expressing ourselves that are entirely unique to us. So that would be my second thought. Forget about you can be whatever you want to be. Why don't you think that whatever I want to be is my very best favorite self?
On that note, I think it may be an Oscar Wilde quote, be yourself because everyone else is taken.
or otherwise, you Miss Piggy, who I think is a fantastic symbol for all of us women. And Miss Piggy said, be yourself because otherwise it gets confusing for the postman.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us today and putting that emphasis on the self and becoming an autonomous individual and the person that you're destined to be.
Thank you for a wonderful privilege and opportunity. Really very special to be with you. Thank you.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance. And we have been talking to Ms. Penina Fenster, who is the editor of Glamour magazine.